Any minute now, I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy and time is strange. Locked inside, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Town should be in Hollywood. Just a second there, I thought I saw something. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts, gonna dress in drag. Only a fool in here thinks he's got anything to prove. Lot of water under the bridge, lot of other stuff too. Don't get up, gentlemen, I'm only passing through. People are crazy and time's strange. I'm locked in tight, my brain used to care, but things have changed. Walking 40 miles of bad road. The Bible is right, the world will explode. I've been trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some things are too hard to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with a losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting her in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Just don't show it. You can hurt someone, not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman who don't even appeal to me. Mr. James and Miss Lucy, they jumped in late. I'm not that eager to make that stay. And people are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Today is the 4th of June, 2018. It's a Monday. You're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. couple minutes after 8 a.m. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today's broadcast is kind of left over from last week, being that last Monday was Memorial Day, and kind of a sequence of events that led to the broadcast or the decision to re-air a previous episode of Your Mind is Your Primary Weapon. I had called in on the town hall meeting on Friday and inquired of about if they were going to go live Monday, being it was a national holiday. And then two or three things happened on the weekend. I ran into a Korean War vet friend of mine, and I'd also spoke with the new post commander of our VFW post, and that about the flag raising ceremony in commemoration of Memorial Day, and they had asked me to be there. And being that both of them started at 8 a.m., I can't be in two places at one time. So I decided to run with the re-air. So today will maybe be a little reflection on Memorial Day. And I'm not sure how far I'm going to go into it, but I noticed I seem to be the only one that had a re-air on Memorial Day. There were certainly quite a few people that went live. And it was unfortunate that, well, you know, first off, I'll acknowledge they got their First Amendment right to say whatever they want. But it was almost across the board that it was, well, that's all right, but we shouldn't be there. That's all right, but we shouldn't be there. That's all right, so I find it hard to pay memorial respects to the war dead because we shouldn't be there. And it was a real downer. You know, sometimes it's more like ants at a picnic. Nobody invited them. Or rain on a parade. And again, they have their right to say what they want. I also have the right to change station, too. I just kind of wonder why it is that just for one day out of the year, you can't cast aside your personal opinion and just give thanks. Because when people join the military, you know, they're not worrying about the New World Order and the Bilderbergs and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and the Club of 300 and the Mormons and the Masons and the Muslims and the Pope and everything. Oftentimes people join the military because they see it's their job, because their father, uncle, relatives. And I understand sometimes it's a marketing slogan as to where, oh, well, you know, these people, we have to pay respect to them because they were doing their duty to the country. And then the people go, well, you know, I don't see why we have to have a pipeline by Unocal through Afghanistan that has nothing to do with. I see all those things. I'm not naive. I just chose to not go there. I choose not to be ants at somebody else's picnic. From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lust, that war in your members? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war, yet ye have not, because ye ask not. Ye ask and receive not, because ye ask amiss, that ye may consume it upon your lust. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Do ye think that the Scripture saith in vain, the Spirit that dwelleth in us lust to envy? But he giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law and judges the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver, who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another? Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell, and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, ye shall live and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Go to now, ye rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborer who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth, and the cries of them which have reaped and entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth, and been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it, until he receiveth the early and latter rain. Be ye also patient. Stablish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door. Take, my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord, for an example of suffering affliction and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endureth. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea, and your nay be nay, lest ye fall into condemnation. Is any among you afflicted? Let him pray. Is any merry? Let him sing psalms. Is any sick among you? Let him call for the elders of the church, and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of the faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up. And if ye have committed sins, they shall be forgiven him. Confess your faults one to another, and pray one for another, that ye may be healed. The effectual fervent prayer of the righteous man availeth much. Elias was a man subject to like passions as we are, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth for the space of 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heaven gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth, and one covet him, let him know that he which coveth the sinner from the error of his ways shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sin. James 4 and 5. A final salute. Afghanistan, deaths from enemy action. The Army, Captain Dylan C. Baldridge, D Company, 1st Battalion, 187th Infantry, 3rd BCT, 101st Airborne, Youngsville, North Carolina. Sergeant William M. Bays, D Company, 1st Battalion, 187th Infantry, 3rd BCT, 101st Airborne Division, Barstow, California. Staff Sergeant Aaron R. Butler, 19th Special Forces Group, Monticello, Utah. Sergeant First Class Stephen B. Cribben, 2nd Battalion, 10th Special Forces Group, Simi Valley, California. Staff Sergeant Mark R. Dill Lankar, 1st Battalion, 7th Special Forces Group, Edgewood, Maryland. Specialist Christopher M. Harris, 2nd Battalion, 504th Infantry, 1st BCT, 82nd Airborne Division, Jackson Springs, North Carolina. Sergeant Eric M. Herk, Headquarters Battery, 3rd Battalion, 320th Field Artillery, 101st Airborne Division, Baltimore, Maryland. Sergeant Jonathan M. Hunter, 2nd Battalion, 504th Infantry, 1st BCT, 82nd Airborne, Columbus, Indiana. Sergeant Joshua P. Rogers, 3rd Battalion, 75th Rangers, Bloomington, Illinois. Sergeant Cameron H. Thomas, 3rd Battalion, 75th Rangers, Kettering, Ohio. Deaths to accident and disease. Sergeant First Class Robert R. Boniface, 1st Battalion, 7th Special Forces Group, San Luis Obispo, California. Staff Sergeant David T. Brabander, 3rd Battalion, 509th Infantry, 4th BCT, 25th Infantry Division, Anchorage, Alaska. PFC Hanson B. Kirkpatrick, 1st Battalion, 36th Infantry, 1st BCT, 1st Armored Division, Wasilla, Alaska. Chief Warrant Officer 2, Jacob M. Sims, 4th Battalion, 160th SOAR, Juneau, Alaska. Iraq, deaths to enemy action. Sergeant Rosane E. Brooks, 2nd Battalion, 319th Field Artillery, 2nd BCT, 82nd Airborne Division, Brooklyn, New York. 1st Lieutenant Weston C. Lee, 1st Battalion, 325th Infantry, 2nd BCT, 82nd Airborne Division, Bluffton, Georgia. Specialist Alexander W. Misseldine, 710th Brigade Support Battalion, 3rd BCT, 10th Mountain Division, Tyler, Texas. Specialist Alan L. Stigler, Jr., 2nd Battalion, 319th Field Artillery, 2nd BCT, 82nd Airborne, Arlington, Texas. Deaths due to accidents and disease. Specialist Avedon A. Chavez, 1st Battalion, 6th Infantry, 2nd BCT, Turlock, California. Corporal Todd L. McGurn, 1st Battalion, 6th Infantry, 2nd BCT, 1st Armored Division, Riverside, California. PFC Brian P. O'Dorn, 2nd Battalion, 82nd Field Artillery Regiment, 3rd BCT, 1st Cavalry Division, Ware, Massachusetts. Chief Warrant Officer 2, Lee M. Smith, 101st Combat Aviation Brigade, 101st Airborne Division, Arlington, Texas. Jordan, due to accidents and disease, Army Specialist. Isaiah L. Brooks, 2nd Battalion, 5th Special Forces Group, Cibolo, Texas. Kuwait, death to accidents and disease, Air Force Technical Sergeant David Board, 130th Airlift Wing, Barbersville, West Virginia. Army Sergeant First Class Houghton O. Brown, 306th Engineer Company, 411th Engineer Brigade, Brooklyn, New York. Specialist John P. Rodriguez, 2nd Engineer Battalion, 3rd BCT, 1st Armored Division, Hemet, California. Niger, deaths to enemy action, Army Staff Sergeant Brian C. Black, 2nd Battalion, 3rd Special Forces Group. Pulley Up, Washington. Staff Sergeant Jeremiah W. Johnson, 2nd Battalion, 3rd Special Forces Group, Springboro, Ohio. Sergeant LeDavid P. Johnson, 2nd Battalion, 3rd Special Forces Group, Miami Gardens, Florida. Staff Sergeant Dustin M. Wright, 2nd Battalion, 3rd Special Forces Group, Lyons, Georgia. 7th Fleet, deaths to accidents and disease. Navy, Yeoman 3rd Class, Shingo A. Douglas, USS Fitzgerald, San Diego, California. Electronics Technician 2nd Class, Kevin S. Bushel, SS John S. McCain, Gaithersburg, Maryland. Electronic Technician 3rd Class, Dustin L. Dolan, USS John S. McCain, Suffield, Connecticut. Electronic Technician 2nd Class, Jacob D. Drake, USS John S. McCain, Cable, Ohio. Information Systems Technician 2nd Class, Timothy T. Eccles, Jr., USS John S. McCain, Manchester, Maryland. Electronic Technician 1st Class, Charles N. Finley, USS John S. McCain, Kansas City, Missouri. Gunner's Mate 2nd Class, Noel Hernandez, USS Fitzgerald, Weslaco, Texas. Electronic Technician, 3rd Class, John H. Hoagland, the 3rd, USS John S. McCain, Killeen, Texas. Sonar Technician, 3rd Class, Ngoc Thi Truong Huan, USS Fitzgerald, Oakville, Connecticut. Information Specialist Systems Technician, 2nd Class, Corey G. Ingram, USS John S. McCain, Poughkeepsie, New York. Interior Communications Electrician, 1st Class, Abraham Lopez, USS John S. McCain, El Paso, Texas. Personnel Specialist, 1st Class, Javier A. Martin, USS Fitzgerald, Hellathorpe, Maryland. Interior Communications Electrician, 3rd Class, Logan S. Palmer, USS John S. McCain, Decatur, Illinois. Fire Controlman, 1st Class, Gary L. Ream, the Jr., USS Fitzgerald, Illyria, Ohio. Gunner's Mate Seaman, Dakota K. Rigsby, USS Fitzgerald, Palmyra, Virginia. Fire Controlman 2nd Class, Carlos V. Gonzon Ceballon, USS Fitzgerald, Chula Vista, California. Electronic Technician 3rd Class, Kenneth A. Smith, USS John S. McCain, Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Somalia, death to enemy action, Navy, Senior Chief Special Warfare Operator Kyle Milliken, East Coast Base Special Warfare Unit, Flaymouth, Maine. Southeast Asia, death to accident disease. Air Force Staff Sergeant Alexandria M. Morrow, 366th Aircraft Maintenance Squadron, Dansville, New York. Syria, death to accidents and disease. Air Force Staff Sergeant Austin Biren, 21st Space Wing, Umatilla, Oregon. Specialist at the Anna J. Murphy, 1st Battalion, 75th Ranger, Loganville, Georgia. Yemen, death to Navy action, Navy. Death to enemy action, Navy. Chief Special Warfare Operator William Owens, East Coast Base Special Warfare Unit, Peoria, Illinois. Death to accident and disease, Army Staff Sergeant Emil Rivera Lopez, 160th Special Operation Aviation Regiment, Tucson, Arizona, off the coast of Yemen. A final salute. Well, I see we're at the bottom of the hour. Maybe we'll take a minute of silence. Have the music coming up here. Today's date is the 4th of June, a belated Memorial Day, a final salute, and not ants at a picnic and rain on a parade. Just maybe one day we can cast aside the people that cast aside their indifferences and did what they needed to do, what they felt in their heart needed to be done.
The greatest monuments to fallen men are not made in marble. They're deep in the sea, deep in the jungles, on foreign battlefields. A rifle driven into the ground with a helmet on top and some tags.
Sometimes Jesus Christ, I heard from at last. But no one listens or cares, not even questions to ask. Someone's to blame, where's the heroes of past? Is there nothing to do? An evil spell has been cast. Sometimes heroes can break. Sometimes heroes can leave. Sometimes heroes fail, even making the grave. There's trouble fighting to go. What's gone wrong? Where's the hopes? And sometimes you don't stay at the end of the road. Sometimes your hope is gone. That life's a pattern of a tone. And sometimes you don't stay at the end of the road.
Well, 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 good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Today is the 4th of June, 2018. It's a Monday, a couple minutes after the bottom of the hour. Your mind is your primary weapon. First 30-minute broadcast, we covered James 4 and 5, talking about war and fighting. And then this is a belated Memorial Day broadcast. Had it planned out for last week, but events led to it being postponed. We dedicate today's broadcast, as always, to Lily, Grace, Antoinette, and for all the military that we had talked about, named their names of where they come from, their hometowns, and their loved ones that they leave behind in the first 30 minutes. I'd like to say thanks for taking the time to tune in today, and thank you for helping support Liberty Tree Radio. My email address is altabib762@hotmail.com. I'll spell that phonetically, Alpha Lima Tango Hotel Alpha Bravo, Echo, Bravo, 762@hotmail.com. Interesting things that have happened. Today is the anniversary of the massacre at Tiananmen Square. I also heard on this morning's news broadcast at 5 o'clock this morning, that I guess up in Denver, there was a FBI agent, and there's a video supposedly out there of him out there on the dance floor busting a move, and he did a backflip, and his pistol fell out of its holster, hit the ground. He went to pick it up. It had an accidental discharge and hit somebody in the leg. So that's for that. The telephone number here at Liberty Tree Radio is 712-432-0900. 712-432-0900. Message comes on, ask you to enter the room number 957-464 in the pound sign. And if you'd like to come up, you can push *6. We'll unmute your phone and then push *6 again after you had your piece. Also, it's something I've been aware of for about 2 weeks, and it certainly seems to be not being talked about very much anywhere, is the violence going on in Central America, in Nicaragua. Now, after Daniel Ortega and the communists took over, that is kind of odd of about all that situation, because of course Amnesty International was all over Anastasio Somoza and being a brutal dictator, and everybody was against it and all of this stuff, and Jimmy Carter stopped any military aid, even though Nicaragua was a member of the OAS and they were being attacked by forces out of Cuba that bound us by treaty to come to the aid of other members of the OAS. And then everything, this, that, and everything else. But now I guess as socialists do, it works fine until you run out of somebody else's money. And now I guess there's supposedly something about Daniel Ortega is changing the Social Security rules or contributions. And so now there's protests against the government. Or at least that's what we're being told. And also that now it's moved beyond just protests against Social Security reform, but actually against the President Daniel Ortega administration. What's he been president for 40 years? Now, also I noticed that just had gone to our church. And I know the church is the body and not the building. I got it. But I'll just use that term because it seems to be what most people comprehend. And about 2 weeks ago, the pastor had said for one of our missionaries to pray for the family that is in Nicaragua. And usually it's on a rotational basis in the bulletin. And then he pointed out the next week that it wasn't a typo, that they had the same family 2 weeks in a row, because the violence had erupted down there, I guess, back in April. Not a whole lot, but protests against, and they've been building and building and turned violent, quite violent. And then on Saturday last week, that the pastor got an emergency email that there was a huge bomb set off less than a block away. So I've been poking around a little bit. I went to insightcrime.org, and that generally has to do with crime, cartel, etc., and there was really nothing in there of about. So I widened the search out and started poking around. And I'm not going to go too far into it, but I'm just going to let you be aware of what's going on, that it might be something that might want to pop up on your radar screen instead of worrying about how big the envelope that Kim Jong-un sent to President Trump and all of this and all of that and the distraction news. I just find it odd, though, that now a new report from Amnesty International is criticizing President Daniel Ortega, because it appears that Ortega's security forces are working with paramilitary forces, and I saw a whole bunch of different numbers. First, it was a couple dozen, and then it was, oh, over here, it's 60 people, and then it's 70, then it's 80, and then it's 100. And they're just out there hosing the people, using live ammunition to break up these. And it also appears that the supporters of Daniel Ortega are working with the government and working with the paramilitary forces and working with the police to crack down on these dissenters. There was a first American that was killed there last week. Not seem to hear any of that. And it was also interesting, too, because when I started doing this research into here, I'm fairly familiar with what was going on in Central America back in the 1980s. So I have a pretty good knowledge about the history and all of this and that and all the issues and different versions of the story instead of the leftist version of the story. But even back then when the communists were taken over, the United States didn't shut down the embassy. But they've ordered out all non-essential people, cutting it down to the staff of just bare bones who actually needs to be there. Emergency travel warnings not to travel outside of the capital, Managua. Do not take public transportation, buses and taxis. Only authorized U.S. government embassy vehicles. Things are just really deteriorating down there. So I just figured I'd pass on a little bit of that information. As usual, I come up on the micro effect on Thursday and Friday, right after the Intel report in the morning from 8 to 10 Arizona time every Thursday and Friday. And it was kind of interesting, too, that we ran out of time. We were discussing heat injuries, had a caller, and were given their formula for the rehydration. We covered quite a few things that planned on only having it run for a short while, but it turned into about 2 hours of heat injury. We came across the publication and the points that they had made, and I expanded it out a little bit and discussed those parts and pieces of it. Oh, and one other thing, too, for those of you that claim that the National Guard is not doing anything and the border's wide open, they also reported this morning on the morning news at 5 o'clock that since April 4th, when the Arizona National Guard was deployed to the border, they have assisted the Border Patrol in 1,200 arrests, 1,200 arrests of illegal aliens along the Arizona border. So the border's not wide open. It's not business as usual. There are things that are going on, huge drug busts going on along the border. But, of course, the news media is not going to report on that because then it would paint a different picture because, oh, Donald Trump is just a racist and he doesn't like brown people and, oh, these people aren't animals and, oh, these people, they just want to come up here and pick lettuce and then, yeah, right. So, and I do have a considerable stack of other border news. Oh, and by the way, P.S., since last week there was the glitch in the scheduling of the broadcast. Today's broadcast is going to be 2 hours long, so you get the chance to make up a little lost time. See, we got about 10 minutes to the top of the hour, so we'll take a top of the hour break, and we'll continue to the second hour of Your Mind is Your Primary Weapon. So that's what's the deal. So in the first 30-minute broadcast, we had a Bible reading out of James 4 and 5 about war and fighting. And then we went down the list of 2017 military deaths, the most accurate and complete list that I have for 2017. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today to Liberty Tree Radio, and please help support the broadcast. My email address is altabeeb762@hotmail.com. altabeeb762@hotmail.com. Also, Bob Miner, his contact information, if you'd like to get him a message, is 701-251-2365. 701-251-2365. Message will come on. Ask if you'd like to speak to him directly or purchase a phone card. Then it'll ask you to key in the first three letters of his last name, M-I-N, and that translates out to 646. And then you'll have about 10 seconds to leave some words of encouragement. If you'd like to send Robert Miner a letter, a card, keep those cards and letters coming in, folks. It's Robert Miner, M-I-N-E-R, S-C-C-C, and that's the abbreviated, that is Sierra Charlie Charlie Charlie, 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. Robert Miner, M-I-N-E-R, Sierra Charlie Charlie Charlie, 205 6th Street Southeast, Suite 201, Jamestown, North Dakota, 58401. So where are we? I think they said it was the 29th anniversary of the attack on Tiananmen Square. And of course nobody knows because the communists aren't going to tell you. Some say it was in the hundreds, some say it was in the thousands. Oh, at first they went in there to break up the peaceful protest, but were they actually running them over with their armored personnel carriers? You can hear the recordings of the actual shooting of the communist Chinese troops to break up the peaceful protest. The Denver FBI agent video out on the dance floor does the backflip. Pistol falls out of the holster, hits the ground. He goes to pick it up, and it discharges and hits somebody in the leg. If you'd like to call in today, the telephone number is 712-432-0900, 957-464, and the pound sign. And then to unmute your phone, push star 6, 712-432-0900. And then the room number is 957-464, and the pound sign to unmute is star 6. Also touched a little bit on the Nicaraguan violence going on in the protests, and it appears that the counter-protesters that support Ortega are working with paramilitary forces in coordination with the police to crack down on the protesters. Hundreds or thousands of people have been injured, and I also saw a couple of reports. One was the deaths are in the 80s, and some of them are up into the hundreds. So once again, we're not going to hear. So that's the deal. The first news article here is out of insightcrime.org. It's a rather lengthy article. Insightcrime.org, 24 May 2018, U.S. life sentence for Honduras partners of El Chapo sets precedent. A U.S. court handed down a life sentence to a Honduran drug trafficker linked to the Sinaloa cartel, just the second time that a life term in prison has been given to a Honduran kingpin. On May 21, the U.S. Department of Justice announced the sentencing of Honduran drug trafficker Sergio Neftali Maija Duarte, alias El Compa, by the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Florida. He was arrested in Honduras on August 20, 2017, and extradited to the United States in October of that same year. Mejia was found guilty in January 10 for trafficking over 5 kilograms of cocaine since 2012. After seeing the evidence presented at the trial, which included testimony from other drug traffickers and photographs of a shipment of more than 2 tons of cocaine, the jurors determined that he led a criminal network that conspired to traffic more than 20 tons of drugs into the United States. Compa's extradition was requested after he came up in the testimony of Davis Leonel Rivera Maradiga, the leader of the Chiquiros drug trafficking group, and during the trial of Fabio Lobo, the son of former Honduran president Porfirio Lobo. In 2017, Fabio Lobo was sentenced to 24 years in U.S. prison for drug trafficking. Mejia is said to have been present at a meeting to plan the 2009 murder of then-drug czar Julian Aristidas Gonzalez, who served as head of Honduras's anti-drug trafficking agency until he was gunned down by a hit squad. Former Congressman Freddie Najera, also extradited to the United States on drug trafficking charges, is said to have attended the same meeting. Some of the drugs El Compa trafficked were hidden in banana containers coming out of the Colombian ports on the Atlantic Ocean, including Cartagena and Santa Marta. They then entered Honduras via the port city of Puerto Castillo in the Department of Colón, where Mejia had been active at least since 2000. With drug trafficking groups like the Chiquiros and the Wilter Blanco group, and et cetera, and it goes on and on and on. Now, this one is also an interlocking, some of the similar information, but this is from justice.gov, and it is dated 21 May 2018 for immediate use by the Justice Department of Justice Office of Public Affairs. Honduran drug kingpin sentenced to life in prison. Honduran national Sergio Neftali Maija Duarte was sentenced to a life prison involvement in a large-scale international car transportation operation. Acting Assistant Attorney General John P. Cronin of the Justice Department Criminal Division, U.S. Attorney Benjamin G. Greenberg for the Southern District of Florida, and Special Agent in Charge Albulfus P. Wright of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, Miami Field Division, made the announcement. On January 9, a Miami jury found Mejia Duarte, 41, guilty of conspiring to distribute over 5 kilograms of cocaine. Knowledge that the cocaine would be unlawfully imported in the United States. The evidence at the trial, which included testimony of multiple co-conspirators and pictures from a seizure of over 2,000 kilograms of cocaine, showed that defendant Mejia Duarte led a large-scale international narcotics transportation organization based in Honduras and Guatemala that was part of a distribution chain spanning from Colombia to Mexico in the United States. In that role, Mejia Duarte and his workers secretly received multi-hundred kilogram quantities of cocaine from Colombia and Panama, temporarily stored the narcotics in Honduras or Guatemala, and then transported the narcotics onward, typically northward, including into Mexico. Mejia Duarte used go-fast boats, helicopters, and airplanes to operate his shipping route, and as witness this is detailed at trial, much of the cocaine was supplied to the Sinaloa cartel led by Joaquin Guzman Larrea, also known as Chapo, and Ismael Zambada, also known as Mayo. Based on the witness's trial testimony and documents submitted in the case, Mejia Duarte is responsible for trafficking at least an estimated 2 20,000 kilograms of cocaine in operating his criminal network. The witnesses described how Mejia Duarte carried guns, employed bodyguards and assassins, and engaged in a bloody war with a rival trafficker. During Mejia Duarte's arrest, Honduran law enforcement found a Glock pistol and a automatic rifle in a closet in the bedroom where he was residing. Until his arrest, Sergio Natali Mejia Duarte was a violent and prolific drug trafficker whose criminal organization supplied cocaine to the Sinaloa cartel, knowing full and well that the poison would make its way to our streets, said Acting Assistant Attorney General Cronin. Today's sentence reflects the unwavering commitment, as a ruthless trafficker, Southern District, you got it. You know it's all Fathom on the back after that part. Well, I got a couple more, but I see we're right at the top. I'll start on this one. Costa Rica arrests 0.2 security forces growing drug trade ties. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. You're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio, and thanks for being with us today.
Have white skin, got assassin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire sky. I'm a well-dressed man, waiting on the last plane. Standing in the gallows, with my head in a noose. Any minute now, I'm expecting all hell to break loose. Crazy and time strange. Locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed. Should be in Hollywood. Just a second there, I thought I saw something. Gonna take dancing lessons to the jitterbug rag. Ain't no shortcuts gonna dress in drag. Only a fool here thinks he's got anything to prove. Lot of water under the bridge, lot of other stuff too. Get up, gentlemen, I'm only passing through. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, my brain. I used to care, but things have changed. I've been walking 40 miles of bad road. The Bible is right, the world will explode. I've been trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some days are too hard to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with a losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting her in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy and times are strange. Nothing tight, my range. I used to care, but things have changed. Just don't show it. You can hurt someone.
not even know it. The next 60 seconds could be an eternity. Gonna get low down, gonna fly high. All the truth in the world adds up to one big lie. I'm in love with a woman who don't even appeal to me. Mr. James and Miss Lucy, they jumped in today. I'm not that eager to make them stay. Some people are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today's date is the 4th of June, 2018. It's a Monday, and you're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. We're trying to make up for a little bit of lost time, and we've expanded today's broadcast out to 2 hours. I'd like to say thanks for taking the time to tune in today. My email address is altabib762@hotmail.com. Alpha Lima Tango Hotel Alpha Bravo Echo Bravo 762@hotmail.com. And as always, we dedicate today's broadcast to Lily Grace Antoinette. And also, we expand it out today to the in commemoration or in memory of the people that lost their life in the military in 2017. Today is the anniversary of the Communist Chinese quashing the democracy movement in Tiananmen Square. An untold hundreds were killed. If you'd like to call in today, telephone is 712-432-0900. 712-432-0900. A message will come on asking to enter the room number, and you can enter in 957-464, and then the pound sign. And if you'd like to come up, you can push star 6 to unmute your telephone. The first 30 minutes of today's broadcast, we read a list of all the military deaths in 2017, both of enemy or accidents. And the second 30-minute broadcast gave an update about the breaking out of violence in Nicaragua, and also we covered some border news of the events of what is going on. I also mentioned about the lesson we were having on the micro effect last week on Friday, discussing heat injuries, that I know that there are people that have requested more medical information. We'll try and expand out to that. Only thing, I'm trying not to turn it into Mike's medical hour, but it's very easy for me because of my medical background to see the bigger picture of all the parts and not just the gun part of this whole thing. everything about the education, the strategy, the tactics, the training, the leadership, the planning, the intelligence preparation of the battlefield, financing, field sanitation, organization, security, communications, medical, after-action review, tracking, all these aspects that we cover here on Your Mind is Your Primary Weapon. I try to keep it a little bit focused instead of being distracted by President Trump and the Russians and President Trump and how big the envelope that Kim Jong-un sent the letter to President Trump, or what's happening in some all far off place, a look over here stories. Have you heard anybody honestly reporting on the outbreak of violence in Nicaragua and about the at least 80, if not more than 100 people have been killed? There was an American citizen that was killed here down in Nicaragua just in the last, I guess he lived in Florida but owned an establishment, a bar down in Nicaragua, and he had left his area there in Managua to go help out a friend who was surrounded and couldn't leave. I found him a couple of days later with his couple of the Lubyanka breakfast, we'll call it. When we left off at the top of the hour, I had one more news item that I'd like to cover. Is insightcrime.org, and it's dated the 24th of May, 2018. Costa Rica arrest point to security forces growing drug trade ties. Authorities in Costa Rica have arrested several members of a drug trafficking network led by former security officials, highlighting a trend of deepening security force corruption in the Central American nation, fueled by its expanding role as a drug transshipment point. Costa Rican authorities on May 23rd arrested 22 alleged members of a transport group headed by former members of the country's Coast Guard and police, according to a Public Security Ministry press release. The former law enforcement officials were allegedly helping transport U.S.-bound drug shipments from Colombia and Ecuador through Costa Rica. The shipments were recovered from strategic points at sea using Costa Rican-flagged go-fast boats that brought the product to the country's southern coast, where it was returned to the South American suppliers, according to C.R. Hoyt. The news outlet also reported that the suppliers paid the transport network with cocaine, which was resold in Costa Rica. It's kind of interesting, once again. Now, that's kind of odd, too, because Costa Rica has generally been a very stable country. They have in their constitution that a complete and separate power. Some of the problems have occurred in some of these banana republics down in Central America that the dictator oftentimes gets overthrown by collusion with the Air Force and the Army. So they've set aside things that that they're independent of each other and elections, and it's generally out there to support the people. And they've generally had a rather peaceful country compared to some of the other El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Nicaragua types of parts of when those things were going on in those places comparatively to Costa Rica. But now that the security forces are clamping down on groups like the FARC or the Urbanos or something like that, so they've decided to shift the TTP, the tactics, techniques, and procedures that they follow, and hopefully they're trying to get in and out of Costa Rica without too much notice of their activities. A couple of weeks ago, because there was not a broadcast, we were talking about protracted war, the parts of about the popular forces versus the regular armies, and the guerrilla as a missionary, a Mao Zedong on the War of the Flea, and some of the lessons of China. Now, as kind of a semi-quick review, because Mao wrote that ours are guerrilla tactics. They consist mainly of the following points. One, divide your forces to arouse the masses. Concentrate our forces to deal with the enemy. Number two, the enemy advances. We retreat. The enemy camps. We harass. The enemy tires. We attack. The enemy retreats. We pursue. To extend stable base areas, employ the policy of advancing in waves, then pursued by a powerful enemy, employ the policy of circling around. And number four, arouse the greatest numbers of the masses in the shortest time at the best possible methods. These tactics are just like casting a net, and at any moment we should be able to cast it or draw it in. We cast it wide to win over the masses and draw it in to deal with the enemy. End quote. And in areas where little opposition is met, the net is cast, the guerrillas disperse, to carry on the work of the political indoctrination, to strengthen the internal economy of the revolutionary movement, to establish rear base areas, bases which, it should be noted, can be expanded or contracted or even abandoned on short notice. Where opposition is strong, the net is drawn in. The guerrillas are able to concentrate heavy forces. Mao recommends 2 or 4 or even 6 times the enemy's strength against the single enemy weak point. Battles are not prolonged. On the contrary, it is Mao who has invented the 5-minute attack. It consists of a sudden onslaught, a brief and furious interval of fighting, and then the assault is broken off as suddenly as it began, and the guerrillas rapidly retire. Having inflicted as many casualties and had taken as many arms as possible during the stated time, but not lingering even a minute, Mao stressed the battle of quick decision, the very opposite of Western military strategy. Where the enemy, backed by heavy industry, is able to make a long-drawn technological contest of each battle, relying on superiority of equipment and logistics to tell in the end. So the guerrilla must rely on speed, superior position, and locally superior manpower, and must break off the engagement before the superiority of the heavy weapons can take its toll. As we've remarked before in our previous lessons, the guerrilla fighter is the War of the Flea. The flea bites, hops, and bites again, nimbly avoiding the foot that would crush him. He does not seek to kill his enemy at a blow, but to bleed him and feed on him, to plague and bedevil him, and to keep him from resting and to destroy his nerve and his morale. All of this requires time. Still more time is required to breed more fleas. What starts as a local infestation must become an epidemic, as one by one the areas of resistance link up like spreading ink spots on a blotter. Now in the second phase of the campaign, the period of equilibrium, the stalemate sets in. The government finds it cannot destroy the guerrillas. For the movement, they can only seek to contain them while preparing new offensive for the future. So the guerrillas cannot destroy the army. They continue to harass it, taking advantage of lulls in the conflict to expand the revolutionary base areas, nibbling away at the fringe of no man's land that surrounds each liberated zone, improving the internal economy of crops, workshops, armed repair depots, and using the time to agitate the people, to forward the war of propaganda, and to sharpen the internal conflicts that shake the enemy's camp as the long, expensive anti-guerrilla campaign bogs down and the end appears hopelessly far away. Now in the third phase, that the revolutionary strategic offensive or the general offensive begins when the opposing forces of the government and those of the guerrillas have reached a balance and the insurgent sees the military initiative, now no longer as pure guerrillas, but as a mobile columns up to a division strength capable of confronting and destroying the army in open battle. Although the insurgents formerly gave way at the approach of the enemy or depended on hit-and-run ambushes, they'll now give battle using small units to pin down the main forces of the government while their regular troops are thrown, always in superior numbers, into the concentrated attacks on the most vulnerable objectives along the enemy's attenuated lines of support or weakest points of concentration. When encircled, the rebels, instead of dispersing and exfiltrating under cover of darkness, as before, will concentrate and make a powerful breakthrough at a chosen point in the enemy's lines, again, perhaps using secondary troops to pin down the army in other areas. Gradually, sometimes using guerrilla tactics, at other times concentrating for powerful strategic blows, the rebels will succeed in cutting the enemy's main lines of communications and isolating segments of the enemy's forces, which can be destroyed one at a time. And the insurgents will themselves begin to hold territory, first expanding their rural bases until they have blotted up most of the countryside, making it untenable for the enemy, then seizing the villages and the larger towns, driving the enemy back into its urban strong points, which, once isolated, can be reduced piecemeal. Now, as the strong points are reduced and the army's manpower is whittled down, with big units captured or annihilated and others defecting, as may be expected, if they are native troops, the rebels will come into possession of heavy weapons, tanks, and artillery, which can be used to reduce even larger strong points until at last the siege of the cities, aided by popular uprisings, will bring to its successful termination in the destruction of the surrender of the army and the collapse of the government. So a principle can be observed throughout the entire process. The more the enemy holds, the more he has to defend, and broader the insurgent target area. Now, on the other hand, the more the insurgent fights and wins, the more he has with which to fight and to win in arms, in manpower, and material resources. Thus, the objectives of the government and of the insurgent must be diametrically opposed. The army seeks to end the war as quickly as possible in order to minimize the losses, and the insurgent seeks to prolong it since he has everything to gain by it. Now, it's clear that the guerrilla objectives cannot be accomplished overnight or even within any predictable period. It is a basic premise of Mao's theory that the phases of the campaign will overlap, that on many occasions setbacks will occur, mobile units may have to be dispersed, again to become guerrilla bands, and the third phase may slip back into the second phase. Territory that has been won may be surrendered and may change hands many times before it can finally be consolidated as part of the spreading Red Terror. And on a map, the areas of guerrilla activity, they'll appear as tiny ink spots. Gradually, they'll become splotches, and the splotches will grow larger until they finally run together into solid red, spreading over the entire national territory. But we have to note here that the coloration will progress not from east to west or north to south, but from the outside in, from the mountains and the jungles to the cultivated rural areas, then to the villages within those areas, then to the towns and along the national highways, and only in the final struggle to the diminishing pinpricks of the cities. Now, the principles of the operation may be observed in the communist war on Chiang Kai-shek's nationalist troops in the period immediately following World War II, and analyzing a campaign of 17 months duration in 1946 and 1947, during which 640,000 nationalist troops were killed or wounded and 1,050,000 were captured, Mao lists the following points of insurgent strategy. 1. Attack dispersed, isolated enemy forces first. Attack concentrated, strong forces later. 2. Take small and medium cities, an extensive rural area first. Take big cities later. 3. Make wiping out the enemy's effective strength our main objective. Do not make holding or seizing a city or place the main objective. Holding or seizing a city or a place is the outcome of wiping out the enemy's effective strength, and often a city or a place will be held or seized for good only after it has changed hands a number of times. And 4, in every battle, concentrate on absolute superior force, 2, 3, 4, or sometimes even 5 or 6 times the enemy's strength. Encircle the enemy forces completely. Strive to wipe them out thoroughly and do not let any escape from the net. In special circumstances, use the method of dealing the enemy's crushing blows. That is, concentrate all-out strength to make a frontal attack and an attack on one or both of his flanks with the aim of wiping out one part and routing another so that the army can swiftly move its troops to smash the other enemy forces. Strive to avoid battles of attrition in which we lose more than we gain or break even. In this way, although inferior as a whole in terms of numbers, we shall be absolutely superior in every part and every specific campaign, and this ensures victory in the campaign. And as time goes on, we shall become superior as a whole and eventually wipe out all of the enemy. 5, fight no battle unprepared. Fight no battle you are not sure of winning. Make every effort to be well prepared for each battle. Make every effort to ensure victory in the given set of conditions as between the enemy and ourselves. 6, give full play to our style of fighting, courage in battle, no fear of sacrifice, no fear of fatigue, and continuous fighting, that is, fighting successive battles in a short time without rest. 7, strive to wipe out the enemy when he is on the move. At the same time, pay attention to the tactics of positional attack and capture enemy fortified points and cities. 8, replenish our strength with all the arms and most of the personnel captured from the enemy, our army's main source of manpower and material are at the front. 9, make good use of the intervals between campaigns to rest, train, and consolidate our troops. Periods of rest, training, and consolidation should not be very long, and the enemy should, so far as possible, be permitted no breathing space. And much of what Mao enumerates will seem obvious, but there are important points to note, some of which are in direct conflict with conventional military doctrine. Now, although the mobile warfare of insurgency resembles that of a conventional forces, it is based on a guerrilla strategy and works towards somewhat different objectives. The insurgents drive inward from their rural areas towards the town and then the cities. They occupy the hills and the woods before they seize the roads. In this, they behave in a manner diametrically opposed to the dictates of Western military strategy, in which strong points, the industrial centers, the communication centers, the population centers, are hit first, and then the mop-up of the rural area is left until last. What counts for the insurgents is not strong points, but territory that the enemy cannot contest without involving himself in a contradiction, and that of extending his lines and weakening his effective striking force, hence the rural areas first, the cities last. Second is the main source of both the rebel munitions and, especially in China, the rebel manpower is the opposing army. The Chinese armies were conscripted, badly paid, or not paid at all, often ill-nourished and ill-clothed. The troops were themselves peasants. It was to be expected that defections would be common, and this was the case. Mao had no scruples, for that matter, about recruiting bandits. They were the same class, origin, and in much the same condition as the nationalist soldiers and those of the warlords, and could be easily indoctrinated to fight in the popular cause. His reasoning, no doubt, was that peasants who had some military training were easier to absorb than peasants who had had none. And as to the question of supplies, it's the tenet of the guerrilla theory, not only in China, but in all revolutionary wars, that the enemy must be the main source of weapons and ammunition. And one advantage is that one always finds the proper calibers of ammunition close at hand. Another greater advantage is that logistical problems are reduced to a minimum. The enemy supply lines serve both armies and often serve the guerrilla army better than they do that of the adversaries. I see we're right down to the bottom, and we should hear the music here in just a moment or two. We'll kind of wrap that up. Maybe we'll branch off here into some of the colonial war and the French experience and the strategy of tactics of Vo Nguyen Xiap and how the Viet Minh won in Indochina. But definitely need to join together with the band, and together we can move forward. You're tuned in to Liberty Tree Radio. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today. Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike down here in Arizona land. We're in a downhill slide. Your mind is your primary weapon. Today's date is the 4th of June, 2018, and the Monday. I got an expanded broadcast out here today to a belated Memorial Day broadcast. Today's broadcast we covered over in the first 30 minutes a reading from James 4 and 5 about war and fighting. And then we covered the 2017 military deaths to dedicate today's broadcast, and also sending this one out to Lily Grace Antoinette. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today, and thank you for helping support Liberty Tree Radio. My email address is altabib762@hotmail.com. altabib762@hotmail.com. It's the anniversary of the massacre in Tiananmen Square. If you'd like to call in here in the last 25 minutes or so of today's broadcast, the telephone number is 712-432-0900, 712-432-0900. The room number is 957-464 and the pound sign, 957-464 pound sign, and then you can *6 to unmute your phone. We also covered the violence breaking out in Nicaragua, kind of humorous that before Amnesty International, a communist group over headquartered in England, so I just find it kind of ironic that back in the 1980s, the Amnesty International was condemning Anastasio Somoza and his counterinsurgency war against the Sandinistas, and now all of a sudden, now that the Sandinistas have taken over Nicaragua and basically driven it to the ground, and now all of a sudden Amnesty International is condemning the government of Daniel Ortega. Also other things that water, food, things like that, basic stuff that a society needs is missing from the big cities. We covered quite a bit of that, about the United States Embassy pretty much closing down to the bare bones. So it must be fairly violent down there, because even during the insurgency back in the 1980s, that the United States never closed the embassy. We also covered quite a bit of border information. And also, just as another note, that this Thursday and Friday, we'll be back up on our regular time on the Micro Effect from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. That comes on right after the morning intel report with Mark Kornke and Don Betcher. We had covering quite a bit of heat injuries in that broadcast. What had started off as a small segment turned into half of the broadcast, but that's okay. And the thing is we didn't even cover everything. I had a couple of other points that we got to cover. They had a caller that called in and gave their version of a rehydration formula. We'll cover that back over on Thursday and Friday's broadcast on the Micro Effect. Basically, it's the same time as today's broadcast here on Liberty Tree Radio. And let's see, I think that is about what we have. Bob Miner, if you'd like to call and leave a message of encouragement for him, telephone is 701-251-2365. 701-251-2365. And then the message will come on asking if you'd like to speak to him directly or by phone cards, and then it'll ask you to key in the first three digits of his last name, and that translates out to 646. And then it'll say, leave a message after the tone. And, you know, you're supposed to say, this is Mike in Arizona Land, and this is messages for Bob Miner. Hang in there, Bob. There's a lot of people out there supporting. I heard Hardway come up on the afternoon Intel report. I think that was either last Thursday or Friday. And it got back through the grapevine that Bob Miner got about 17 telephone calls. So, and also another thing that Hardway had mentioned, that Bob received a large manila envelope chock full of postcards from all around the country. So just to show that there's a lot of people working in that direction. A couple other things that there were requested by Bob for help on certain things that it's being worked on a couple of different other aspects. So to kind of wrap up our study here, we were talking about the phases of guerrilla warfare and the method is, and you know, once again, it goes back to our basic, because there were some of the writings that came out of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and when it was discussing insurgency, because there were so many of them going on and they were all communists, some people, the writers started to get the mindset that it was strictly a communist thing. But we can demonstrate multiple insurgencies that had nothing to do with communism. So as we go through these, but because we are on a study of Mao and Mao's writings in the insurgency in post-World War II China on those aspects. So, but kind of to sum it up is that guerrilla strategy is dynamic because it has a positive political objectives and positive military goals. The strategic defense, as Mao called it, is an active defense based on incessant attack. The harassing tactics of the guerrilla, while they bear superficial resemblance to the delaying actions fought by rear guard regular troops, they have a different purpose. It's to wear down the enemy and to force him to overextend his lines so that his manpower can be annihilated a unit at a time. Guerrillas can gain the initiative, writes Mao, if they keep in mind the weak points of the enemy. Because of the enemy's insignificant manpower, guerrillas can operate over vast territories because the enemy is a foreigner and a barbarian. Guerrillas can gain the confidence of millions of their countrymen. The reference was to the Japanese invaders in China, and Mao makes it clear at all times that his laws of war were meant to apply specifically to China and the Chinese situation. What he says, nevertheless, has a more general application for foreigner and barbarian substitute oppressor and exploiter, and the confidence of which he speaks can be gained in many countries where no question of foreign intrusion arises. Now on tactics, quote, in guerrilla warfare, select the tactics of seeming to come from the east and attacking from the west. Avoid the solid, attack the hollow. Attack, withdraw, deliver a lightning blow, seek a lightning decision. Now on politics, without a political goal, guerrilla warfare must fail, as it must if its political objectives do not coincide with the aspirations of the people, and their sympathies, cooperation, and assistance cannot be gained. The essence of guerrilla warfare is thus political in character. And again, quote, on the other hand, in a war of counter-revolutionary nature, there is no place for guerrilla hostilities. Because guerrilla warfare basically derives from the masses, and it's supported by them, and it can neither exist nor flourish if it separates itself itself from their sympathies and their cooperation, end quote. Now, Mao's rules for the conduct of guerrilla warfare are rhetorical, redundant, and often less precise than one might wish. They leave many practical questions unanswered, and it's to be remembered that he was writing political documents, not a text for insurgents. His collected works remain, nevertheless, a primer of guerrilla theory and the study of his campaign, which ended with the destruction and the defeat of an army of 3,700,000 men, the greatest in Chinese history. And it reveals much that is relevant elsewhere in countries like China, lack arms and industry, but do not lack the basic ingredients of revolutionary war: space, time, and will. Remember that. Space, time, and will. We're going to surrender space to buy time, and going to utilize that time to gain the popular support of the people and get the will of the people behind the insurgents. Space, time, and will. Now, as an expansion, and also as we cover over those, that we hear a lot of the writings of Sun Tzu in that, make a noise in the east, attack in the west, when the enemy advances, we retreat. When the enemy camps, we harass, etc., etc. So they're clearly not communist, and they're clear, because as far as I know, that General Sun Tzu, Kalamazoo, Sun Tzu, Sun T, Sun C2, C2 squared, I don't have any indication that he was a communist. So these are universal principles. I guess it was the same principles as the insurgents that operated here in the United States. When the army came marching in there at Concord and Lexington, they attacked the flanks. They withdrew, moved down the road because they knew the back roads better. And when the British came along again, they sniped at them and used the guerrilla tactics, just nipping away at them, never giving them any rest, and whittled away and whittled away at them. So these are universal methods, tactics, techniques, and procedures, strategy. But a lot of it also has to do with training and leadership and planning and intelligence preparation of the battlefield and field sanitation and organization and security and communications and a proper after-action review to find out what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and how to prevent the problems from occurring over and over again. Now, what about colonial war and the French experience? Because the strategy and the tactics of Vo Nguyen Giap, how the Viet Minh won in Indochina, how do the laws of revolutionary war laid down by Mao Zedong apply to the remaining colonies of the great powers? The answer is implicit in the historical record. During the two decades since World War II, no colonial war has been lost by a colonial people once entered into. Malaya and the Philippines are only apparent exceptions, but not real ones. We'll discuss those further on up the road, but in the more fortunate instances, the colonial powers have ceded their authority in good time, bowing before the wind of history. Elsewhere, the revolutionary action was wrestled the erstwhile colonies away by the extortion of terror and civil disorder, as in Cyprus and Morocco, or by clear force of arms, as in Algeria and Indochina. Now, the struggle against the French colonial power in Indochina is of special interest because in it we find the most clear-cut examples both of the sort of revolutionary war that must be fought to a military decision as opposed to the insurgency that ends in political decision, and of a war fought consciously and even according to Mao's precepts. So as Katzenbach remarks, quote, the war the Viet Minh followers of Ho Chi Minh fought in northern Indochina followed Mao's teaching phase by phase, despite the claims of Viet Minh leaders that they improved on the doctrines, end quote. The struggle lasted from 1946, when Ho Chi Minh took up arms against the French invasion, actually had taken virtual possession of Vietnam the year before, with the surrender of the Japanese to the Britain and Chinese and the native forces, and until 1954, when the country was petitioned at the 17th parallel under the terms of an international government reached at Geneva, following the fall of the French stronghold of Dien Bien Phu. Now, if the outcome of the war represents something less than a complete victory for the communist Viet Minh, it nevertheless spells absolute defeat for the French and marked the end of French rule in Vietnam, although the bulk of the 500,000-man French Expeditionary Corps remained intact. They had 172,000 casualties in 8 years of fighting. Its spirit was broken, and the political compromise that followed failed to disguise the fact that the French arms had met ignominious defeat in the field at the hands of what had been considered a ragtag native army that could be smashed in 10 weeks. Now, during 8 years of battle, the Viet Minh passed from a movement of scattered guerrilla bands operating in company or even platoon strength to a regular army of mobile divisions armed with light artillery and equal in organization and fighting ability to the best that the French could put into the field. But while the final phase, the strategic offensive described by Mao, was fought by such an army, by far the greater part of the long campaign was guerrilla warfare. Now, the definition of guerrilla warfare offered by General Vo Nguyen Giap, the victor of Dien Bien Phu, concurs with Mao's. Even the rhetoric is the same, because he said, quote, guerrilla war is the form of fighting by the masses of a weak and badly equipped country against an aggressive army with better equipment and techniques. This is the way of fighting a revolution. Guerrillas rely on heroic spirit to triumph over modern weapons, avoiding the enemy when he is the stronger and attacking him when he is the weaker, now scattering, now regrouping, now wearing out, now exterminating the enemy. They are determined to fight everywhere, so that everywhere the enemy goes, he is submerged in a sea of armed people who hit back at him, thus undermining his spirit and exhausting his forces. End quote. Fortunately for his cause, Giap has absorbed the practical wisdom as well as the political rhetoric of his mentor, so that he is on solid ground when he writes, quote, in addition to scattering to wearing out the enemy, it is necessary to regroup big armed forces in favorable situations to achieve supremacy in attack at a given point and time to annihilate the enemy. Successes in many small fights added together gradually wear out the enemy manpower, while little by little strengthening our forces. The main goal of the fight must be destruction of the enemy manpower. Our own manpower should not be exhausted from trying to keep or occupy land, space, time, and will. Giap's definition of his objectives is purely military. Now, in a colonial situation, the political effects of the guerrilla war are less important, perhaps, than in a war against the native government of a semi-colonial country like Cuba. Certainly, they're less important in the case of a nation defending itself against an invader, France's role after World War II. But this is to speak of the effects of the struggle on the government morale and on world opinion. Clearly, the primary political task of militating the people remain the same vital importance in Vietnam as anywhere, a fact which Ziap himself recognizes. Writing for the first years of the Long Guerrilla Campaign, he says that in the beginning, quote, "There appeared a tendency not to take into due account the part played by political work, and the political workers did not yet grasp the fact that the main task was political education and ideological leadership," end quote. Later, the terror was perceived and due attention was paid to the key political problem, that of uniting the nation in all its social sectors and joining all ethnic groups in a multinational country against foreign domination. The party strove hard to avail itself of favorable opportunities to push the people into the struggle. Now, Ziap relates with considerable candor, and again, quote, "The National United Front was to be a vast assembly of all the forces capable of being united, neutralizing all those which could be neutralizing, dividing all those it was possible to divide." Now, early neglect of the peasantry was quickly rectified in the face of the realities of war in a peasant country, and the agrarian reform with the slogan "Land to the Tillers" became a rallying cry of the revolution. Quote, "The enemy of the Vietnamese nation," writes Ziap, "was aggressive imperialism, which had to be overthrown. But as the imperialist has long since joined with the feudal landlords, the anti-imperialist struggle definitely could not be separated from anti-feudal action." Now, on the other hand, in a backward colonial country such as ours, where the peasants make up the majority of the population, a people's war is essentially a peasants' war under the leadership of the working class. A general mobilization of the whole people is, therefore, neither more nor less than a mobilization of the rural masses. Oh, I think we'll leave it there. So we start to see this part of about the strategic terrain is not a mountaintop or a city or a strategic crossroad, but the strategic terrain in an insurgency is the population. Because once you have the population on your side, therefore by extension, you have the mountaintop. You have the whole mountain. You have the hills, the steps surrounding the mountain. You have the city. You have the bridge. You have whatever other strategic terrain that you may want. Because you see, if you go about it in the classic conventional military, that you can seize a mountain, but then you have to win over the support of the population. So the guerrilla, the insurgent, goes about winning over the popular support of the population, and then therefore, by extension, you own it all. So as we cover over these broadcasts and these blocks of instruction of about what insurgency is, I'd like for you to think about how these concepts could be translated from General Ziap or Mao Zedong or Thomas Jefferson into a situation in any other country in the world. Now, clearly, as an example in modern history, the Afghan Mujahideen and the insurgency in Iraq, they don't possess nuclear-powered aircraft carriers and submarines, infantry battalions and tanks and strikers and MRAPs and all that stuff. It's just a guerrilla and his will and the support of the population that feeds him, that gives him intelligence of when the military is strengthening, or when the enemy is falling back and regrouping, what are the logistical chain on how to slip, as Mao had said, that the gorilla is the fish in the sea that the people swim. So I'd like for you to think about that, because when the news media and the government sit here and badmouth insurgents and convince you it's some guy with a beard and a turban yelling Allah Akbar, nothing could be further from the truth. I suspect that what they want to do is to convince you that resistance is futile. And as in closing, that this is a belated Memorial Day broadcast, we take the time to honor the military, the ones that had passed away in 2017, to sacrifice, to move forward, not to sit here and belittle them and say it really wasn't this and it really wasn't that, and, oh, it had to do with some pipeline or some we wanted to go over and steal their stuff. I just ask that maybe today that you could cast aside and just pay some homage to the people that had died in foreign countries. And I'm sure there were a number of people that died here in the United States in the military training accidents. And that's what it's all about. If you'd like to send an email to me, my email address is altabib762@hotmail.com. The anniversary of Tiananmen Square. So should we just turn our back on those people that wanted democracy and the end of one-party rule? I don't know. I think that they at least deserve some help. And the Nicaraguan violence and the border news. And again, coming up here in a couple of days, it's the nice way that the schedule works out. The broadcast is only 1 or 2 days away. So I'll be coming up here to continue our blocks of instruction on the micro effect at the same time from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Arizona time on Thursday and Friday on the micro effect. Have some other things to add of the heat injury aspect of what is going on there. We covered quite a bit today on today's broadcast about the 2017 military deaths, the events going on in Nicaragua, some other border news, and our study of guerrilla warfare in the eyes of Mao and Zap. So, expect to hear the music coming in here any time now. And again, we'll dedicate this broadcast to Lily, Grace, Antoinette.
Gentlemen, I'm only passing through. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, my brain used to care, but things have changed. I've been walking 40 miles on bad roads. The Bible is right, the world will explode. I've been trying to get as far away from myself as I can. Some days are too hard to touch. The human mind can only stand so much. You can't win with a losing hand. Feel like falling in love with the first woman I meet. Putting her in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her down the street. People are crazy and times are strange. Locked in tight.